so am I, still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to Reuben.
The Rock's ribs, the Rock's ass. The Rock's got hurt ribs. Big deal. It's no big deal at all. There is no quit in The Rock. No quit in me, my friend. No, 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 no way. The Rock said this. You go ahead and take out The Rock's ribs. Fine. Take off one of The Rock's arms. He'll fight you with the other arm. You take off one of The Rock's legs. The Rock will hobble and hobble and hobble and keep hobbling and whoop your monkey ass with the other leg. Easy, big fella. Easy. Oh, yeah. You go ahead and you can take off one of The Rock's testicles, the people's testicles. Oh, yeah. The Rock will take the other one. Throw it way up in the air. Keep watching it. Damn, that's a good-ass testicle. The Rock will take his boot, shine it up real nice. Excuse The Rock. Turn that sumbitch sideways and
stick it straight up Benoit Guerrero's tender asses.
She said put it in her mouth, mouth. Yeah. I mean her motherfucking mouth, mouth. She said put it in her mouth, mouth. Yeah. I mean her motherfucking mouth, mouth. She said put it in her mouth, mouth. I mean her motherfucking mouth. You wanna go down, why not? I'd be like Herbie and hand you a cock.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, who has put his vacation on hold for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm back.
How's San Francisco been before you head back tonight?
Well, I was only there for 2 days, so what did I do? I got to see the house from Full House.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it full?
I couldn't tell.
No.
It was just from the outside. I went on the streetcar? I went on the tram.
Yeah.
I saw the bridge. Yeah. The big bridge there.
I hear.
It's golden?
It's not really golden. It's more an orange. Well,
yeah, they call it golden. There's like a...
I heard that you went down to the El Nino training center.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Gilbert Melendez.
A listener of ours, Rich O'Toole, who happens to be an MMA fighter, he lives in San Francisco, trains with Gilbert Melendez and Jake Shields out in the El Nino training center, and graciously invited me to take some classes there. So, I did that. That was quite the experience.
That was fun.
My ass kicked.
It was weird being in a different gym environment, different people.
Yes, but you know, once you get into it, it's all largely the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed like such a long time ago. It was just yesterday, but it seems like such a long time ago. I don't even remember it.
What feels like yesterday, but was actually a week ago, was when you and I went to jiu-jitsu. I broke out of my funk of missing jiu-jitsu. I missed like 2 months worth. But was when you proposed last Tuesday, me coming, I was like, yeah, I really have no reason not to go. And I was very excited to go, actually. And I had a really good time on Tuesday. It was like I felt active, and you
put me in a bunch of arm bars there, John.
We were working inverse arm bars, which were so complicated to put on. I could never pull that off in, like, if I was, like, sparring with somebody.
Well, I mean, it was your first time doing it.
Oh, it's a really tough hold to put on somebody.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but, you know.
It's at a position, too, where it's really tough to tap the person. It's like, I feel if I got caught in that in competition, I think my arm could break because it's really hard to get your hand out to tap.
Yeah, that's why sometimes you gotta verbally submit.
Yeah, and I think some guys would not listen to you if they verbally submit, because they'd be worried about you lying when...
What?
That's happened in fights before, where guys won't let go until the referee stops them.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like Chael Sonnen, who verbally submitted to Paulo Filho and then denied it afterwards.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as the referee hears you, then, yeah. The referee tells you to stop, then you stop. But, you know, yeah, even if a guy... shouts, I think you got to wait for the referee to step in.
Now, since I last went to jiu-jitsu, you have also gotten the Shinya Aoki pants.
Oh, yes.
Where'd you get these?
I got some spats. I got them from a website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're awesome, man.
You walk in way and you look like a guy that's like, whoa, that's the serious guy.
Oh,
like,
really?
You're not fucking around here. You just walk out. You got your rash guard on, your Aoki pants.
Oh, you're not fucking around. They make me feel like a superhero. Not only that, they're good to keep the germs away.
I noticed that. I think I should get a rash guard, because today, like, I sweating all over and then had this like rash on my chest today as a result. And I wish I had a rash guard
yes.
to prevent such a thing from happening.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I never knew what the big deal about rash guards.
Unless it was your staff, then there are remnants of it that I've now contracted.
Well, you never know, man.
I'll find out.
Wash very carefully, John. Maybe even step away right now. Well, you're getting a bit close to my microphone.
It's a good thing I'm not going to a foreign country tomorrow where my health insurance doesn't exist, so that's good to know.
I think you're covered. You'll be fine. Anyway, I never knew what the big deal about rash guards were. I mean, you know, we joke about John Danaher wearing his rash guard all the time. If I had enough balls, I would wear my rash guard everywhere. That thing is so comfortable, feels like you're not wearing anything.
Oh, really?
And it feels like, you know, it's compression, so it kind of makes your muscles a bit more alive and tense, and it just feels awesome.
Well, why don't you start it? You're at an environment where I think people would be much more accepting to it, rather than, you know, if you worked at like a stockbroker or something.
Sure.
It's like, what the fuck is that guy wearing? Whereas here, it's like, oh, Wei Ting's got a rash guard on. He must be training later tonight.
No, I probably won't. I'll probably just, you know, to go back home in my car. Like, you know, but still, like, if I didn't care so much about having friends and not being seen like as a weirdo, then yeah, I would totally do it.
You should by now, at the age of 29, have graduated out of worrying what others about you. And you don't strike me as someone that gives a fuck what other people think.
I mean, you know, not all the time, but like, I'm still very, a very self-conscious person.
I don't know why. You seem to be like, you just go to the beat of your own drum, as the saying goes.
Well, maybe I'll start wearing some spats.
Where did you get your rash guard? Where's a good place to go?
Online. I mean, you can get them anywhere. I bought like a typical Under Armour thing. Actually, Open Mat sells their own,
But you didn't buy one there, which makes me think...
I didn't get one there.
No, it's not worth getting one there.
No, it totally is. I would have. That's actually what I want to get next.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's our update on rash guards.
When are you going to go back to Open Mat?
Well, I just... All right. Stupid me. I've been to Boston already, and now I'm back.
Yeah. How was that? We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, UFC was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, what did you think of the outcome of that?
All right, so you're in San Francisco tomorrow, and yeah. I'm back from Boston already, so my health scare in Boston was fine. It was a week ago.
So you did go to the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back.
And how was your health insurance?
It was fine. I didn't have staff, so it was great.
Oh, wow.
So today is Wednesday. Yeah. You're not here, which means my odds of going are drastically reduced. When are you back? You go back.
Why wouldn't you go by yourself, man?
I don't like going by myself.
What's the big deal? What are you going to do when you're actually, like, you know, in there competing against somebody else?
Oh, that's fine. I don't mind that.
You think George St. Pierre only trains with one person? You think he's only comfortable in there with Rory McDonald?
Well,
and nobody else? I'm not going to train today. Rory's not going to the gym.
Maybe.
Come on.
He wants people that are going to push him, and
yeah,
I'm ready.
And you need multiple training partners for that reason.
Well, maybe I'm going to go. Maybe I'm going to go this week.
Yeah, you should.
So,
when's Jason Agnew going to go back?
I don't know if he's coming back or not.
Why not?
I don't know. We kind of lost him.
This is me calling Jason Agnew out on the on the radio.
August 18th, you know, this past Sunday, that marks 1 year to the day when we first went to Open Mat.
Oh, wow.
It was the day of the first Ronda Rousey-Misha Tate fight.
No,
it wasn't. It was Sarah Kaufman, Ronda Rousey.
That's correct. Wow, I can't believe it. It's been a year.
We went. It was you, me, Robin Black, and John Ramdy, and then we ventured in, and that's where you've... Just
I got
became
hooked.
Engrossed.
I got hooked, man.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it's like it's made a pretty big difference in my life. And just that I, you know, initially we all decided to go just to kind of do something physical because, you know, John and I were just like, we're wrestling fans that just watch pro wrestling, don't really do anything physical with our lives. We talk into a microphone for, 40 hours in a week.
Sure.
And that's pretty much all we do. So, you know, we wanted something to do something physical. But, like, for me, eventually it didn't even become anything about working out. It was just, like, finding a new game and a new, hobby to take part in. That's just, like, so deep. You know, you get to the point where you're, like, outside of training and you're just thinking about watching all these videos online, and you're like, I want to try that next time, you know? Like, just thinking about linking all these different things together, it's just totally engrossing and awesome.
Now, at Open Mat, they have no gi classes, and then on other nights of the week, it's gi classes, which is kind of like what the brand extension was like, where you had different themes on different nights of the week, all under one roof of the WWE.
Not the same thing at
Would
all.
No gi be like Raw, and the gi classes be like SmackDown? There's a lot of blue geese.
I don't think that's the same thing at all. Like, there are people that do both. You can't jump from brand to brand.
Well, the high-level people go back and forth like the champions did back in 2002.
Yeah. Even the low-level guy. Anyway, okay. I kind of... Yeah, okay.
You're a solid mid-carder at Open Mat. I would say you are like...
No, I'm on Velocity.
You're like the Kurt Angle.
I'm not even on Velocity.
What are you talking about?
I'd say I'd be tough enough. I'd be the qualifying. I'd be the auditioning portion of tough enough.
If you ever won a major jiu-jitsu tournament, would you flash the crowd?
Flash the crowd? Oh,
I hope you get that reference.
You're referencing this show, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my plan. Yeah, to show my tits to the crowd. And if you haven't seen this episode of SmackDown, you'd be completely weirded out.
Yeah, and probably have just turned the show off by now.
Yeah.
Well, last week we chatted about Raw from August 19th of 2002, heading into SummerSlam that year. Today we're going to review SmackDown going into that pay-per-view from August the 22nd of 2002 from Fayetteville, North Carolina. And we talked about it last week, the changes at the time, the brand extension, and... As we mentioned last week, Way, SmackDown at this point, I mean, just such a solid roster at the time. And this was going into the fall of 2002, which many people would probably peg as the best time period in SmackDown's history. Mm-hmm. You had the SmackDown 6, you had Heyman writing the show. Heyman even, like, has said, you know, he kind of looks at that time period as, like, his really great period of booking wrestling, like, over top of, you know, even ECW. It was kind of those... sort of 6 months or so where he was running SmackDown. I mean, it wasn't even, to me, a comparison point between Raw and SmackDown. SmackDown was so far ahead.
Sorry.
Easy there. Do you have to go?
My car.
Oh.
My car alarm.
Oh, are you going to get towed?
No, I checked it beforehand.
Oh, okay.
I got to set my car alarm every 3 hours.
As you maneuver around Toronto city parking.
Yeah, so I can get away with free parking.
Oh, well, that's key in downtown Toronto.
Yep.
So SmackDown, I mean, as I was just saying, I mean, it was just the show I looked forward to every week in 2002,
and
really.
It's not so surprising to hear Paul Heyman say that, because, like, at what point in his career would he have had control over such an incredible group of talent at the budget that he was, you know, producing the show at? And, you know... I wouldn't say, like, from the get-go, SmackDown became, like, the show to watch. I'd say, you know, initially, if you remember when the brand extension began, they had a slightly different roster. You had Jericho on SmackDown, you had Triple H on SmackDown, sort of as, like, the guy.
That's right.
And I didn't think the show was really all that great, even at that point. But it really wasn't until they traded those two back over to Raw for Benoit and Eddie coming over to SmackDown, that I think things, and of course, like, Rey Mysterio debuting on SmackDown as well.
That's
really
right.
Helped.
Rey had just debuted the month before before this. He had been there like 4 weeks at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, the addition of, like, those three people, in addition to you know, eventually Brock Lesnar would become a permanent guy, Heyman would take a bigger role in the writing staff. I think all those things factored into making this show, like, the show to watch.
Now, with the Benoit deal, it was weird because he was drafted to SmackDown while he was out with his neck injury, came back on Raw, and then got traded to SmackDown.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Very confusing of why they brought him back on Raw to begin with, other than to set up this trade. But yeah, at this point, you had Benoit and Guerrero moved over to SmackDown. They got the Un-Americans all over onto Raw, so it was still kind of trying to balance things out, I think, at the time, during the summer. But the announcers for the show, Michael Cole and Taz, and my first question, Way, is how you found Taz on this show compared to 2013 Taz?
Excellent. I mean, okay, maybe not excellent, but
passable announcing.
500% better than the Taz.
500% better.
Yeah, 500% five times. I mean, I, you know, we've commented before in previous reviews of this era that Taz can be a great play-by-play guy.
Yes.
And we've commented about how great he is at calling technical, nuances of the matches. And you would especially see that when they would start doing a lot more of the SmackDown 6 tag team matches.
And I think to that point, imagine that. I thought Taz was kind of key to calling a lot of those matches because they were doing such different styles from all over the world at that time on SmackDown. And just the idea of Jerry Lawler in that spot, I think would have really lost its effectiveness. Yeah. Like SmackDown was being presented as kind of like, here are a lot of up and coming stars. It's different styles. It's a different presentation. You have Heyman. And I think that it was, everything was kind of an evolution of WWE at the time, and that included the announcing of Cole and Taz, who were really looked underneath Ross and Lawler as the B-team.
SmackDown was a much more straightforward pro-wrestling-focused product, and Jerry Lawler definitely wouldn't have been the right person. Taz was. Michael Cole, too, for that matter.
I like both of these guys.
Was really good. I mean, you know, Cole never... never was one to be able to call moves properly. Like, even on this show, he would call a Hurricanrana leg scissors. That was often what he would do.
Vince knew his limitations and just went with the generic, what a maneuver. Whereas Cole was like, I'm going to take a gamble on this one. No, that's not a Boston crab.
I still thought he did a good job at trying to follow the action and kind of doing, you know, his best Jim Ross impression. But Taz kind of filled in those gaps where Cole wouldn't know some of the moves. Taz would.
Cole has gotten better to me in terms of trying to try and sell stuff, especially since they've got him away from that heel character. But even at the end of this show, it's like, watching these shows back to back with Jim Ross doing the big sell for SummerSlam, and then you have Michael Cole.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for SummerSlam. It's like, stop it. Just stop it. You don't. Emotion is something you cannot fake. It's either sounds real or it sounds contrived. And my God, 12-year-old Michael Cole, excited for Christmas, it was not doing it for me. I'm so excited. probably sounded great in his head before, though. The show started off, there was a sign in the crowd, Brock Lesnar ate my family. What a sign.
Okay.
Heyman and Lesnar came out to start the show, and Heyman refers to the number one box office attraction, the biggest star in the history of SmackDown, the biggest action star, and says, you might think I'm talking about The Rock, but all of those attributes once belonged to Hulk Hogan, and now his career is dead because of Brock Lesnar, and promises a collision tonight between Lesnar and Rock. And Lesnar says he feels the same way when he beat Hulk Hogan a few weeks ago, and he's going to treat Rock like a little bitch.
Yeah, I thought Brock, you know, at this point, 11 years ago, his first year on the main roster, as a speaker, his delivery was fine, you know, but I think he's way better today, obviously, as we saw this last week.
A week and a half ago. SummerSlam. I don't want to talk about the finish of Punk.
Oh, we don't even need to talk about it. It's pretty explains anyway.
We talked about it enough Monday.
Yeah. So, or you and...
And Brian.
Brian did. Yeah, not me. A guy, you know, but Brock, a guy who looks and moves like that, doesn't really need to say much anyway.
That's the reason Heyman's there with him.
Yeah.
The mouthpiece.
And I've always thought these two are a great team. I love that they're reunited at this point.
I do too. I always thought they were broken up way too soon, and Brock Lesnar is the babyface at that time period.
Oh, yeah.
Not a fun little run.
The other thing I really noticed, like, just off the top here watching this show, is just how everything feels exactly the same as it is today. I'm talking about the lighting, the set, the people, the announcers. Like, we've mentioned it before how you compare 2002 WWE to maybe 1991 WWE, it's a world of difference.
Completely
in terms of television.
Different.
But you compare 2013 WWE to 2002, looks pretty much the same.
Oh, absolutely.
They changed the cameras. They threw a light on the background on the crowd.
They have Twitter handles instead of website URLs.
But everything looks exactly the same, even down to the roster of guys, you know?
Wait, that was really stunning to me watching these two shows of how much guys are still around today and in regular spots. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's really amazing to see that. And I'm with you. I think that's kind of a result of Kevin Dunn, who he's got his formula. He's got his idea of how you shoot television. But, man, look at any other sporting events and do the same 11-year comparison. It's like stuff is shot differently. There's changes made. It feels different. It feels like you're moving forward. And with the WWE's production, listen, their production is excellent. And maybe the argument is if it's not broken, don't fix it. But it's been very much a static look for a long, long time, going back to like 99, really.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, perhaps, like, obviously the peak of the success of the company was around this time, right? So I could see them maybe thinking, but at the same time, I feel like pro wrestling is always something that needs to evolve, and I think you reach your biggest successes as you continue to evolve, and I don't think we definitely have not had much development over the past decade.
My dentist is calling. Next up, we had
answer?
Hello? Yes, this is. Yes, this is John.
John Pollock?
Yes, John Pollock.
Hi, my name is Gladys. I'm calling the dental office.
Yes.
I just wanted to remind you that you're due for your next dental cleaning.
Oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, so would you want to book an appointment?
Sure. How's the end of August, sometime around then? Maybe on a Thursday?
Thursday?
Sure.
Thursday, there's an opening at
3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock. Yeah, that should be fine.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Remind me to edit this out.
Yeah, okay, I will.
I hate going to the dentist. It's such a waste of time, really.
It's not a waste of time. Sometimes it can be.
These people, and I'm not going to go to this dentist appointment because I'm actually in the midst of switching dentists. They just don't know yet.
Oh, you just lied right there.
Yeah.
Why did you do that? Why did you just say, I don't know? This woman's going to fill in her calendar at 3 o'clock, John Pollock.
No, I'm going to cancel it because there's a dentist that's much closer now that I'm
Why did you just say no
to?
Right then?
Oh, I'll deal with it later. Like,
what a dick. Somebody's going to call next and be like, I'm only available on Thursday at 3 o'clock. Can I please get my, I don't know, bleeding tooth pulled out?
Well, that's an emergency.
You're
going to
be sorry.
And I should be bumped for something like that. It's not like there's one dentist at this place.
I don't understand why you
but
did
this,
that.
The reason I'm leaving is, first of all, this place, it's closer to where I used to live. So it's a bit of a trek to get there in traffic in downtown. Second, it's like they want me to come back like every 3 months. So I finally just said, like they always, at the end of one appointment, it's like, okay, time to schedule the next one. And last year, I started to pace it out, being like, yeah, 3 months, I'm busy till at least this month. And then the last time I went, they were like, do you want to book your next appointment? I'm like, no, I don't. I really have a crazy schedule. I'll inquire later. And I just never called them. So now it's been like 8 months or something like that.
Yeah.
It was perfect. I don't need to go twice a year max. I don't have any problems with my teeth. I'm fine.
I agree. Like, I know many people who have never been to the dentist, and I think they, for the most part, they've been okay. But definitely be careful of that, because they do recommend that you go twice a year, but I personally don't feel like you need to, for most people, go that, you know, even that. Like, once a year, I think, is fine, especially if you're covered with a health plan or something.
Yeah.
Just visit once a year, and if there
they're
any
sneaky,
issues,
too. It's like, they'll be like, oh, here, take your fluoride. And then it's like, that's a gigantic amount that they put on your bill here, the fluoride, which it's just like, I hate fluoride. I don't think it's even necessary.
You don't think it's useful?
It's gross, man. I just...
I'll call again.
Uh-oh.
Let's see what's going on. They called back.
Hello?
Your call is very important to us. Please
what
hold
the
and we'll be right
fuck?
With
you. You called me, motherfucker.
And I'm on hold?
You and your dentist may decide in office.
You gotta cancel this appointment right now, live on the air.
Teeth not in need of whitening will be isolated by a small rubber dam.
I don't have time for this.
How
I'm
dare,
really busy.
How dare they you interrupt our podcast? Why would they do that? Why would they call you back and then put you on hold?
Unbelievable. All right.
You shouldn't even cancel it.
You're not gonna show up now. All right. SmackDown. The Rock came out after Lesnar and Heyman's promo and says, it will be a night like no other, and ends it by walking to the ring, teasing that he is going to go attack Lesnar when Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit attack Rock from behind, putting Rock into the crossface as Lesnar is laughing as Cole is appalled at those scavengers. Those scavengers.
They paired Eddie and Benoit together after they came over from Raw together. And what reason exactly were they attacking the Rock here?
They had been doing some matches earlier with Rock, I think against Eddie and then against Benoit on SmackDown. So they had been somewhat pairing them with the Rock leading up to SummerSlam.
Edge. You notice who came out to stop the scuffle?
Was it Johnny Ace?
Yeah.
Yeah, John Laurinaitis. He had a few appearances on this show as a road agent.
And Fit Finlay as well.
Yeah, Fit Finlay was there. Edge arrived in his pleather pants, circa 2002, and he gets attacked by Benoit and Guerrero as well, and he's left laying.
I really like that. They just basically booked Eddie and Benoit to just like, oh, here's a guy walking down backstage, and then it's just these two men like charging and just attacking, especially in the case of Benoit, is the better role for him where he didn't need to speak.
The Hurricane and Shannon Moore taking on Jamie Noble and Tajiri. They had Nydia in their corner. Jamie Noble was the Cruiserweight champion, and this was a kind of a mini reunion of Three Count and the Young Dragons.
How so in terms of the Young Dragons?
Jamie Noble.
Yeah. But where's the other dragon?
Well, I said one of the. There's a mini reunion. It's like a 2-on-1 with Tajiri as the odd man out.
All right.
Who could have been a young dragon?
Why is that?
Because two of the three young dragons were Japanese. And the Japanese wrestlers all.
Oh, so they're all the same.
Huh? No, they all band together.
Oh, it's all the same thing.
Well,
I get it.
Taz tells a joke about how Nydia, I'm trying to say this coherently here. Nydia really likes her wrestling, but you should see her box. That's what Taz said.
That's pretty good.
Very, very clever. Hurricane hit a cross body off the top. They really pushed in this match way the fact that the Cruiserweights were only on SmackDown, and that was one of the featured elements of SmackDown that you don't get on Raw.
Definitely.
And letting them kind of work a somewhat Cruiserweight style.
Cruiserweight style, yeah.
They didn't let them go all out with tons of stuff.
It was not like X Division or Indie style. That was just kind of like more Spotfest oriented. Not here. This was more like a WCW Cruiserweight style.
We had Tajiri hit a handspring back elbow, but then went into a back suplex by Moore. Hurricane got in with Noble, hit a blockbuster off the second turnbuckle for a 2 count. Fireman's carry into a neck breaker onto Noble by both babyfaces. Then Hurricane hit the eye of the Hurricane to Noble, a chokeslam to Tajiri, but then Moore counters a powerbomb with a sunset flip to pin Jamie Noble. They went 5 minutes and 7 seconds, very fast-paced match, and they continued fighting after the match when Matt Hardy ran out, who had recently been moved to SmackDown from Raw, and he starts standing alongside Hurricane and Moore, puts their hands up, and then gets the two to hoist them up on his shoulders, as this was the midst of the Matt Hardy turn as the egomaniac here in his home state.
I thought he was hilarious. He just runs out after everything had already been finished, and I to be honest with you, I never really thought Matt Hardy really had it in him to play a heel. But I think, you know, this type of heel, just as the overly cocky dude he is just excellent at. And it's kind of similar to the character he's kind of playing in Ring of Honor right now, where he's just like, he thinks he's better than everybody. And I think he's awesome here.
So he has now moved over to SmackDown. Stephanie McMahon confronts Guerrero and Benoit in the back, and says how they could have jeopardized the main event of SummerSlam by attacking The Rock. And if that happens, they are going to have a dramatic pay cut. And then Benoit spoke. And he says, last week, you wanted me to make The Rock tap. And Stephanie says, yes, in a fair match. And that Bischoff already screwed up this week by putting Hunter in a match on Raw, and he almost hurt his ribs. And then Edge attacks Benoit with a chair as Guerrero runs away, and Edge tells Stephanie to make a tag match with Guerrero and Benoit against The Rock and Edge. And Stephanie, after this big speech about no one getting hurt before SummerSlam, says, sure, have a tag match tonight. Chris Benoit was not the highlight of this segment.
No, I wouldn't say so.
Not a great talker.
I actually thought Steph did a fine job in this role.
Yeah, she was fine.
You know, she was, it was kind
she
of
a, has actually gotten worse, I would say. I think of that crying segment last week on Raw with yeah. Triple H as one of the lower points of WWE programming this year in terms of acting.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
was fine at this
I
point.
I agree. But, you know, like, this was sort of a drastic turn for Steph. Like, last time we saw her, she was a...
The whiny head of ECW last year.
No. Oh, yeah. I meant even in WWE before this GM role. She was like, a part of that Triple H and Jericho feud.
Yeah, yeah. And then comes back... This was so weird because it was like her and Shane tried to put their dad out of business... And now a year later, she's running one of the brands.
Yeah, people forget.
Oh, we just got to get over that. Just family squabbles.
Yeah. But it was interesting how they would re-debut Steph just basically as sort of like a babyface manager and a completely normal one. You know, no more low-cut tops. She's very well covered in every aspect. But I thought she played that role well because likely it is probably quite like what she is in real life, just a woman who commands respect.
Yes. And then I remember in the fall, they would kind of deviate because she was still a baby face in the fall, and they were bringing in Scott Steiner, and it was a bit, would he go to Raw or SmackDown? And they made you believe that Stephanie fucked him to get him to come to SmackDown, and then he still chose Raw.
Oh,
and it was
really?
Like, she's like the baby face authority figure, and great stuff.
Oh, wow.
Another empowering moment in WWE history for the female audience. So Stephanie makes the tag match for later on tonight, and then Matt Hardy is with Hurricane and Shannon in the back, talks about what a big pop he got here in Fayetteville, just outside of Cameron, his hometown, and says it wasn't just because he was near his hometown, and then he bets them that if he goes out now, he's going to get double the reaction he just got. And he says, watch this. And he goes to the back, goes to the gorilla position. He just says, just play my music. I'm going out to do my thing. And he comes out and actually does get a pretty good reaction coming out. He was still using the Hardy Boys theme at this point, and comes out, poses, does his like finger salute and everything like that.
Like just, but super obnoxious.
Yes,
in the way
like
he's doing
fuck
it.
This guy.
Yeah, oh, it's me. Yeah.
Then he gets cut off and interrupted by Chavo Guerrero, who says, "Listen up, white boy." And challenges him to a match, and they just start fighting, and this leads to a match, which makes me think this is the most poorly put together live event, like just giant holes that we can allow for a guy to prance around and then leads to a match.
You never know. Stuff happens.
Anything
man.
Can happen, I guess.
They must leave some leeway for like impromptu match.
No, when a guy just wants to go for a cheap pop.
Yeah.
Guerrero had the early advantage in the match, hit a big back suplex to Hardy, applied an octopus submission. Hardy then hit a back body drop, a reverse neck breaker. Guerrero then jumped into Hardy and takes a side effect for a two count. Hardy hit a leg drop off the second turnbuckle, goes for the twist of fate, but as he does so, Kane's pyro goes off, which we saw on Raw the previous week, or earlier that week, and just a message on the screen with this dramatic music, and this was teasing Kane's eventual return from an injury and what brand he would go to. And Hardy, in typical wrestling cliche 101, can't get his body to properly react to something appearing on the screen, and he's frozen and allows Guerrero to roll him up for the win at 4 minutes and 14 seconds. But the highlight of this for me was Hardy then complaining to the referee and says, "In wrestling, if an explosion goes off, everyone knows the match just ends." And says, "This is my hometown." And says, "This is a worse travesty than when Earl Hebner screwed Bret Hart."
He says all this without a microphone, so it's just the on-camera mics picking this up.
Which added to it, I thought.
Oh,
it was like we were eavesdropping here on this man's legitimate thought process.
It was so good because... like, Matt Hardy was arguing this ridiculousness with so much conviction. And I just thought he was great. Another very good match. So, you know, two matches in, already a much better show than Raw in terms of wrestling.
Yeah. Nothing lighting anyone's world on fire on Monday. Funaki, the number one announcer for SmackDown at the time.
The show keeps getting better.
Oh, yes. Racial... stereotypes.
You know what? Like you heard me like kind of complain about like, you know, the Young Dragons treatment in WCW. I fucking loved Funaki as the SmackDown number one announcer.
You didn't buy a Funaki t-shirt, did you?
I don't know if they ever sold them.
I thought maybe they didn't.
I bought a Kaientai shirt for sure, but yeah. If they sold a Funaki shirt, I probably would have got one. I thought he was hilarious. I thought it was a brilliant idea to get Funaki to do the English announcing gig.
He was like giggling as he was explaining to us that after the break, I'll take you to women's locker room.
This is Funaki, SmackDown, number one announcer. When we come back, I take you to a place no man has ever been before.
Yeah, Funaki!
Inside woman's locker room.
Woman's? How's that?
After this commercial break, stay tuned.
Stay turned. And then we come back from break, and he walks into the women's locker room where Nydia does not have a shirt on, and Molly, the women's champion, is just outraged that this man has walked in with a camera. Women could be changing. And Nydia explains to Molly she isn't loose, she's open. And then, all of a sudden, they realize we have a match together later tonight, and Nydia promises to win the match and then take her top off for the whole crowd as Funaki is literally like hunched over staring into her breasts.
He says, I love women's breasts.
Great.
I thought this was funny. I think Funaki's hilarious.
You're not offended by this?
No, and I'm trying to figure out why. I don't know. I guess I just think that Funaki's to me, he's a comedic character. I mean, he's an okay wrestler. I wouldn't say he's a great wrestler or anything, but to me, he's got much more value as a comedy person, and I thought he was very funny here. If I had a complaint, it would actually be that I thought they gave Funaki a bit too much time to rehearse his lines. I thought it would have been way funnier to just, you know, throw him out there after reading it once and have him screw up.
Was this ever your influence doing the weigh-in, where you kind of played someone that was just kind of out of your depth?
Not at all.
No?
No, I didn't even think of that.
Rey Mysterio's in the back. He says that people see big differences between Angle and himself, but he has proven that he can hang with Angle. And Kurt walks in, say he must have his mask on too tight, and just makes a bunch of short jokes, calling him little fella. And Angle says he's requested a match tonight with Billy Kidman as a preview of what Mysterio will have to look forward to and make him run for the border. Huh. And says that if Rey comes out tonight, he will break his ankle at SummerSlam. And so we've gone from last year's SummerSlam, where Kurt Angle is challenging for the world title as serious Kurt Angle, and now we've digressed back to goofy Kurt Angle this summer.
I wouldn't say it was that serious even in SummerSlam the year before.
Well, in comparison to this, I mean, this was just like...
See, but if you're going to be a funny Kurt Angle, I'd rather you be a heel than top babyface.
Drinking milk.
Yeah. I thought he was fine here.
He was always fine, but yeah. I feel that... I mean, 2002 to me was like the peak year of Kurt in the ring. Like, he was just... To me, that was like his... 2001 and 2 were like his just best years.
Yeah, he's great. He still is. Still great.
Well, not at the moment.
I think he is. I think he's still a great wrestler.
He's kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Right,
not at this very moment.
Next match, and this, I think, proof to our point here, Kurt Angle and Billy Kidman. Billy Kidman, really, as much as he was really a focus guy in WCW, he was someone that was completely forgotten about when he came over to WWE.
And in a way, I feel like very much neutered. I mean, at this point... Listen, Kidman like went from having matches with Hogan. Not to say that was a
no, that was probably a bit of a
but
setback,
I'm just trying to say they viewed him at that level, you know, to have a match with Hogan in WCW. And at this point in WWE, he went from that to becoming this incredibly generic wrestler with generic tights, generic music, like just nothing. They tried to push him a little bit with the cruiserweight division, but never reached the same heights.
No, he was pretty much Mr. Velocity at this point in time. But this was you look back at Billy Kidman's career in the WWE, this is probably one of his highlights, I would say, this 8.5-minute match with Kurt Angle on TV. Interesting, too, at this point, like, you got a pretty lengthy main event. This went 8.5 minutes, and they never broke for commercial during these matches, which I found to be a positive. I knew on Raw, it's kind of... there's a lot longer matches. Like, you're talking 15, 20 minutes for some. You have to take a break. But I really found that these matches benefited by not breaking that flow and going to a commercial break. Angle here, he had stitches on the top of his head from the prior week when Ray hit him with a 619 with his knee pad on, or his knee brace, and cutting the top of his head. So that was the explanation for that. Kidman was selling here, hit a head scissors out of the corner to send Angle to the floor. Angle got upset at some fan at ringside wearing a Mysterio mask and tore it off of him, and then turns into a cross body from the top by Kidman. Kidman hits a bulldog out of the corner, gets a bunch of near falls here. Angle counters a victory roll into the ankle lock, but Kidman counters out of that with an enziguri, goes for the shooting star press, but before he can hit it, Angle runs up, suplexing him off the top. Kidman then blocks an angle slam, ducks a clothesline, so Kurt clotheslines referee Brian Hebner, who gets sent to the floor. Angle then brings a chair into the ring, gets it drop-kicked in his face for an awesome near fall, where the crowd totally bought that Kidman might pin this guy.
And again, it was Kurt Angle, you know, to me, the best at getting his arm up at like 2.99 seconds.
This was just so great. Kidman came off the ropes and got hit with an angle slam, and then Mysterio comes off the top from the crowd, off the top rope with a seated senton as the ref is turned around, and Angle starts chasing after him. Ray runs up the ramp and then just leaps off this ramp. This being a guy who in like 1999 was told that like jumping off a curb on a sidewalk could be damaging to his knee and he should avoid even that level of impact on the knee. And then you see him here with this throwaway, like he leapt like 5 feet off this ramp, yeah, and then lands on his feet, absorbing it on his knees, and then somersaults away. He's like...
Well, he did the roll to lessen the impact.
Well, he still landed on his feet first.
Yeah, I'm not saying it would probably be easy.
This guy's going to be a mess at 60. Just a mess.
Mm.
Anyway, so Angle chases after him, and then Angle gets counted out at 8.5 minutes, and then Angle beats down Kidman after the match with a German suplex, mounts him, angle slam over the top to the floor. Nothing came with Kidman in this performance, but this I just thought was an excellent 8.5 minute match on free TV.
Another very good match on this show, yeah. You know, the finish, it was the right move for a pay-per-view build. You know, Angle gets his heat back with Kidman. Kidman kind of looked like nothing by the end, but he didn't really have a program then. I thought this did a good job of setting up the match on Sunday.
The Rock is in the back, and Edge walks in. Rock is selling his ribs, does a Wei Ting approved promo where he just talked about, doesn't matter if he loses an arm, a leg, or a testicle. He actually mimicked spitting his testicle up in the air and catching it with his mouth and spitting it out.
Yeah.
And then Edge cut him off at the end as he's doing his catchphrase and finishes the Rock's smell what the Rock is cooking phrase and does the eyebrow. What a dork.
Well, Edge at this point, like, I don't think he had really found his identity yet as a singles performer.
He mimicked Hulk Hogan, and then he mimicked The Rock here. Mimicked the stars.
I think he really started to kind of get his first real bit of attention as a singles star after that tag team with Hogan, where he played basically a big mark. And that was sort of his thing here, too. It was just he was a big mark for other wrestlers.
I'm glad that didn't prolong itself.
No, it was a start, but I don't think it really connected. And
the idea was, and you saw this much more on SmackDown than Raw, was the idea of we've got The Rock for a limited time. He's going to put over Lesnar, but let's get him with other guys. Like, they did a TV match where he tapped to the crossface. He worked with Eddie at this time. He was trying to give the rub here to Edge in the tag match and kind of presenting them as equals.
Yeah.
So it was trying to, I think, squeeze the most out of The Rock for the summer that he was going to be there, and knowing that we want to create stars because we know our biggest one isn't going to be around after the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Like, I complain about the content of some of these Rock promos, but the fact of the matter is, I think a lot of people, in younger people, and or maybe even older people, a lot of people connect with these. A lot of people like these, and for the time they worked.
Rikishi comes out, the father of the Usos, Jimmy, Jay, John, whatever combination of them.
Josh is the name of the other one.
Josh.
Yeah.
Josh.
Their real names are Josh and John.
Jonathan, yeah. But that wasn't good enough for...
Jimmy and Jay.
Call him John Uso and Josh Uso.
Yeah. What's so bad about that?
I have no idea. But Rikishi comes out, and they cut to a Ra-Kishi sign. R-A-Kishi.
Spell check that, man.
Unbelievable. So then we got this weird tag match with Rikishi and young John Cena in his Tar Heel blue with opponents brother Reverend Devon. It was Reverend Devon. And don't call me Deacon Batista. And they were right on the verge of their breakup. And this was the pivotal turning point for the Deacon as he would be leaving the ministry, I guess.
That's right, yeah. He would renounce his religion.
This was a weird match in that no one in this had any connection to SummerSlam. Like, this was just, fill time.
A SmackDown match.
It was just a match on SmackDown.
SmackDown talent.
Yeah, but no one involved in the pay-per-view. Yeah. It was just like...
No, you got to have room for those guys, too.
I guess.
But, I mean, tell me, though, like, okay, you had John Cena, the prototype back in OVW, debuting as, like, you know, very, very generic, vanilla... wrestler,
create a player
who happened to have tights. Like, how many pairs of tights would he have had?
He had tights for every city they went to.
Yeah, when he came to Toronto, I think he had blue and white tights.
Yeah,
like how many tights would this guy have had for every town?
Well, the different colors for like every different major city, I guess.
But you know, I think it was a fine character.
And boots. Don't forget the boots.
And boots. Yeah, I thought it was a fine character. What the fuck is Deacon Batista?
Oh, like collected money.
You had a Leviathan, was what this guy was in OVW, and you bring him in as a Deacon? What a stupid name.
They were terrible at this, but I recall...
Under Devon?
They were bringing up so many guys at this time, and I always thought it was like one gimmick after another that just sucked. Like Deacon Batista, Rico... who was great in OVW, and then they brought him up as this, like, hairstylist or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Such shitty, shitty gimmicks that they thought up. And it really, I don't know if it was this idea of, like, you know, handicapping them, and if they're really going to break out, they'll overcome this gimmick. To me, that is not, do that shit in OVW. Don't do it on where you tarnish a guy forever.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, these guys overcame this stuff. Cena didn't get it so badly. He was just, you know, a generic babyface, really. But, man, had this guy not just randomly rapped on a tour bus and the right person heard him, like, this guy legitimately could have been cut.
Absolutely. Like, honestly, at this point in his career, he was about at the same level as a Maven, both in terms of interest and, like, almost in terms of a... I'm sure he was able to cut a better promo than Maven even at this point, but, like, I'm telling you, like...
Maven was more over than Cena
absolutely.
At this point, like, coming off tough enough.
If you're telling me who I saw in the company a year from now between Maven and Cena, I probably would have picked Maven.
So Cena is coming off a big win over Devon on Velocity from that past weekend, and they showed Batista attacking Devon last week after they had an argument backstage where it was a highlight of Funaki in the women's locker room interviewing Nydia, but last week. It was like they did the same segment 2 weeks in a row. Anyway.
Sure.
Rikishi teases sitting on Devon, who gets out of the way. Devon is just constantly berating Batista and telling him, "That's the way you do it," and slaps Batista for the tag. Rikishi hits him with a Samoan drop. There's the ass splash to Batista. Then Devon runs into Batista. There's a DDT to Devon, the ass splash, and Taz yells out, "Hail Mary, full of grace, your face is going to stink," as Rikishi delivers the stink face to Devon. And then a clothesline. Was it to Devon or Batista he gave the stink face to?
Devon.
It was Devon.
Yeah.
Devon then later comes back with an inverted suplex to Cena, then yells at Batista, who then comes in, hits a spinebuster to his partner Devon, and then just walks out on him. Rikishi hits Devon with the bonsai drop, and the babyfaces win at 5:44. And John Cena was a complete afterthought in this match. He was the most random of the four.
He was honestly a nobody.
Totally lost.
And you notice that they never paired him with Batista. It would always be a veteran with a young guy at the same time. You know, it was interesting, definitely, to watch a John Cena match from this far back. And he actually had a pretty good dropkick in this match.
Yeah.
Which you never see at all today.
Maybe.
He does one today, and, like, it's a big deal.
He hit a dropkick.
Yeah.
It is a high spot now, and whenever the rare time he does pull it out.
What did you think of the Reverend Devon character?
You see, I was somewhat torn. It was like the Deacon character was just a killer. But I thought Devon, I always thought he was a great talker and never got to talk as part of the Dudley Boys. But the gimmick didn't get over at all.
It felt very campy and very 80s.
I was at least curious to see if the guy could pull it off. Because, like, his dad was a preacher. And I was like, well, maybe something I'll catch here. Because I always believed in Devon as a talker. He can talk. But it didn't click at all. And they realized that. And this was kind of the end of Batista and Devon. And then it was at Survivor Series where they reunited the Dudley boys. Where it's like, let's just cash in on our losses here. Because both these two are failing on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But better. Who had the worst gear?
Oh, Bully Ray. By far. Just like the baseball jersey with the 80s or 70s font in
this
the back.
This is bad, too. The black and then the white boots and then the neck collar.
He looked more like a stripper than a reverend.
Maybe that could have been his next gimmick.
Yeah.
Male dancer Devon.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dancer. No, never mind.
What?
Jamie Noble is in the back motivating Nydia for the women's title match coming up and finds some old man sitting around in the hallway. And Jamie Noble tells Nydia to give us a tease of what we're going to see in the next match. So she lifts up her shirt for this old man who is drooling and says, yeah, this was just gross.
What would you say if a girl flashed her breasts?
I would be very appalled here that I'm sitting in a corporate work space and this woman is just lifting her shirt out of nowhere.
You'd be no fun. Come on. You wouldn't be like, oh yeah. You wouldn't say what this guy said?
The women's division, like, what a direction they had here in 2002 between bra and panty mud matches one night and then teasing tits on the other show. At least, despite all the differences, they were trying to push the women pretty much consistent on both shows.
Well, it is a male-dominated viewing audience.
Well,
that's what they think guys like.
We got Nydia and Molly for the women's title. Molly defending here with, I guess, Nydia's shirt on the line.
That's right. And Molly is basically, I guess, playing an extension of her, from what we hear, I don't know, very conservative self. Just somebody who's straight-laced and very proper, and by that fact, a heel.
Yes. Nydia, Taz's next big line of the show was Nydia taking her gum out at the start of the match, and Taz explains how when she wrestles, she doesn't like to have stuff in her mouth. She could choke.
You're making me look bad here. I complimented Taz at the beginning of the show.
I'm just pulling out these are the lines you said. There were constant roll-ups here, I guess with the hope that the crowd was so going to be on the edge of their seat of seeing boobs that they would pop for every near fall. I didn't sense that the crowd really was that curious here.
Like, I did.
Maybe at some points. I found it to be not the reaction they were maybe expecting. Molly just kicks Noble off the apron and hits the Molly go round after like 3 minutes of near falls and taking a DDT and hits her Molly go round, which is like a somersault off the top into Nydia, and gets the win at 3.5 minutes. Noble gets in the ring afterwards, says, "Don't worry, I'm still the cruiserweight champion. Nydia is still the prettiest girl here, and she should still take her shirt off." And Nydia agrees. Why do I have to win a match to showcase my boobs to everybody? So she goes to take her shirt off, but Molly drop kicks Noble into Nydia, and this apparently turned Nydia's mind around from showing her boobs to saying, "Fuck this, I'm not taking my shirt off."
Yeah, yeah. I was really impressed by Nydia at this time because I saw, you know, we were all introduced to this girl on Tough Enough as a runner-up, where she didn't really display any type of personality, but then, you know, flashed over a couple years to this point where she debuts with Noble.
Flashed over.
Yeah, haha. But, you know, at this point, she as this character, she showed tremendous comfort and even, I would say, like, in-ring technical ability since that time. So I was really impressed with Nydia, and I liked her a lot back then.
Benoit Guerrero come out without Benoit wearing the Intercontinental title.
Oh, yeah. They didn't really talk about that at all.
His match with RVD. That was the least pushed match really during these two shows going in. It was really Van Damme staying healthy against Big Show, and he's got to bring the title back to Raw.
And that was a match, of course, that you couldn't really promote because they really stuck to that rule of not having, you know, people cross over unless you're the world champion.
Yes, so no Intercontinental title to be found here on this show. So it takes us to the main event, The Rock and Edge against Benoit Guerrero, the Scavengers. Heyman and Lesnar are shown watching this match in the locker room, and Edge runs out first and starts attacking them, and it's a two-on-one as Rock's music then hits, and he runs down to join the match. Eddie forces the referee to deal with The Rock, allowing him to sucker punch Edge from behind, and the Scavengers here get the heat on Edge in their corner, eventually getting Rock for the hot tag. He applies a sharpshooter to Benoit. Eddie breaks it up. There's a spinebuster and people's elbow from Rock to Eddie, and Benoit makes the save. They go after the ribs of the Rock, playing off of the angle from earlier in the night. Benoit gets the crossface applied, and Eddie is pulling the ropes away so Rock can't reach it. They lift his arm up, and on the third one, keeps it up.
I didn't like that. I mean, the arm-raising deal is fine for a sleeper hold when a guy's supposed to be passing out, but for the crippler crossface, which is, like, it's an armbar face lock, so it's supposed to be more of a pain move. I don't think it's right to do the lifting arm.
It comes out every now and then, but I'm glad that pretty much everyone has dropped that aspect of wrestling, and it's now the universal sign.
It's such a cliche.
I hate it.
When was I'd like to see a finish of a guy.
If you had locked me in that fucking inverted armbar, which you did last week, like, fuck off if you're going to, no, I'm out. I don't want to fucking delayed three. It's like, my arm's breaking here.
You don't think in the UFC they'll ever, like, have a guy be in an armbar?
Yeah, Big John.
Lift up the dude's arm.
Imagine that, a guy getting caught in a rear naked choke and his face is going blue and it's like,
he's dying.
One. Two. Three.
Oh, his arm's back up.
No, he's out. He's out. He's fucking dead.
He's brain dead.
Stupid cliche spot that does not hold up 11 years later. So Rock, then Benoit just pulls him into the middle of the ring, reapplying it. Edge breaks it up, makes the hot tag to Edge, who just attacks both heels, delivers a spear to Benoit in the corner, then misses a spear to Eddie, comes back with an implant DDT and pins Benoit. Sorry, Benoit makes the save here, and then Rock comes in with a rock bottom to Benoit, and Edge spears Guerrero to pin him going into their singles match. 11 minutes, 46 seconds. Good match on the show. Really strong main event with these four all working hard and kind of showcasing, teasing the Edge-Guerrero match for Sunday. And then Lesnar got involved afterwards. But good match, I thought.
I thought so, too. Another very good match on the show. And, a high energy, high crowd.
Not to be confused with Coco Beware and Owen Hart.
No.
It's high energy. Lesnar just pops into the ring as Rock turns around. They have the stare down as Rock sends Edge off. He wants to deal with him on his own. They go back and forth with words and then come to blows. Lesnar attacks his ribs repeatedly. Rock makes his comeback and then hits him as Taz yells, "Spit punch!" For The Rock's trademark spit punch. That's the technical term that they use in the dojo.
Spit punch.
Yeah. And Heyman is holding Lesnar back as they do the big stare down with Lesnar on the ramp and Rock in the ring to go off. And that was Taz Cole giving us his big sell. He's excited for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I thought Ross did a better job going off the air.
It's hard to match Jim Ross.
Overall, I thought a very good wrestling show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if necessarily this show did a better job selling SummerSlam, because on Raw you had all the stuff with Michaels at the end, you had Lesnar and Rock involved, and, you know, Triple H and Shawn Michaels was the number two match, and here it was pretty much Rock and Lesnar was the big match to promote on SmackDown.
I like the closing angle of Raw, probably better than the closing angle of this SmackDown, but this episode of SmackDown, I finished watching it, and I was like, this was one of the easiest reviews I've ever had to sit through. Like, I watched this hour and a half show without commercials, And I almost wish that there was another hour because this show.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, because this show.
This show wasn't long enough for you.
It actually wasn't. Like,
that is a first.
Top to bottom, it was just filled with, like, really strong matches, a great roster. Nobody really felt miscast in their roles. Like, I thought Benoit and Eddie's role was perfect. I thought The Rock was good. All the baby faces were legitimately over and accepted by the crowd. All the heels were effective heels. You know? Like, to me, this was, like, an excellent pro wrestling show that I question why this can't happen all the time.
I think this is the first time we've ever reviewed a SmackDown.
We've reviewed, like, actual SmackDowns. Like,
oh, have we?
Like, current ones.
Oh, current ones. But yeah. I mean for a review away, like, going back in time.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, we can find out. We should review more from that 2002 period because it was a great, great period for SmackDown. We're going to get to your feedback right now, but you have a red eye to catch right back to San Francisco, don't you?
I'm actually late. I'm going to try to run my way over to the landing.
Okay, well, why don't I handle feedback while you head back to San Francisco?
No, if you don't mind, yeah.
And I'll wrap things up, and then we'll reconvene next week for SummerSlam 2002.
All right.
The pay-per-view.
Right. I got to get going. I got to run on the, what is it, the launch pad?
Yes.
Area? Whatever.
Okay. All right, well, bye, Way. Well, he's left me, everyone. So we will now dive into your feedback here before we wrap things up here for SmackDown from August 22nd, 2002. We start off with Rob from Wolverhampton, England, who writes, I actually thoroughly enjoyed the SmackDown with no ad breaks. It felt well-paced and absolutely no filler. None of it felt like I could afford to miss the episode, which is so different from today's SmackDown. A few things I did pick up on. It's really eerie to see Benoit attack The Rock whilst a woman loudly screamed in the background. Minutes after Cole and Taz bragged about having Benoit Guerrero, Stephanie threatened him with a huge pay cut. Wouldn't they immediately jump ship to get a pay raise? Of course, the best way to get any heel over is to deny female nudity. If only Nydia was at Capital Carnage 1998, she would have been fine. Rey Mysterio sounded completely different in 2002. No one would ever have thought that creator wrestler's random setting creations, John Cena and Batista, would in less than 3 years be the top stars in the company and headline a WrestleMania. But especially watching them in 2002, Cena had the most generic entrance theme possible, and Batista had no entrance whatsoever. Sign of the night was Rikishi. Rikishi, of course, with an A. Did The Rock really have to go on about testicles? The promos seemed to be deadly serious, but of course, The Rock has to be hilarious all of the time. Overall, though, 8 Matt screwed Matts out of 10. Next up is Rod from Ohio. The opening promo with Heyman and Lesnar was good, as it helped set the tone for the rest of the show. Rock getting a beat down to help sell his rib injury was a nice touch. The impromptu match with Chavo and Matt was solid, as it was planting the seeds for the Matt Hardy 1.0 run. Matt... It was version 2.0, really, that was setting it all up, everyone. Remember the Windows Media Player. Matt going off on Mike Chioda afterwards was WWE's attempt at trying to be a bit more reality-based. I guess it didn't work for me. It made me chuckle to hear Matt say it was the biggest travesty since the Montreal Screwjob, where the story lies in the SmackDown women's locker room as Funaki went where no man had gone before. Tag match featured a fresh-faced John Cena and fairly young Batista was good. Cena's moveset has not changed much and neither has his haircut. The main event was great. Chris and Eddie were great as a heel tag team and very efficient. Edge was still a few years away from him becoming a future WWE champion, and looking at him during this match, while he did do a great job, you would not be able to tell. Taz and Cole didn't irritate me on commentary too much on the show as they focused more on getting the action in the ring over. Really good show. 7 Funakis out of 10. 10, which he actually spelled Fukanis out of 10. Gaurav Kumar from India, what a great go-home show for SmackDown leading into SummerSlam. I love the new SmackDown stage with the giant fist. I still think they should bring that back. You might be the only one, Gaurav. Rock got a good pop from the crowd, but who knew that they would be booing him that coming Sunday in the match against Lesnar? Did you guys notice when Rock and Edge got attacked by Benoit Guerrero, one of the agents who came out to the aid of Rock and Edge, along with the other referees, was a Backstreet Boys-looking John Laurinaitis. Who knew he would become a top heel 10 years down the line? It was funny to see how WWE was back in this period. So desperate to create more Attitude Era-like moments. For example, Nydia wanting to expose her breasts to the world on TV came across as very forced, and I didn't like it. In today's WWE, a diva has to apologize on Twitter after an accidental nip-slip on Raw. Amazing to see the transformation this company has made. Rock throwing up his imaginary testicle in the air, catching it with his mouth, and spitting it out might be the most awkward thing on this show, but I bet we were all laughing at his jokes before 10 years. The mid-carders had great character development back then, and the crowd seemed to be invested into everyone's match. SmackDown kicked Raw's ass from
2204 in every way possible. Can't wait for SummerSlam 2002 review. Thank you, guys. 8 testicles of rock out of 10, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Which is one thing to say is that, you know, whenever you go back in time, it's nostalgic for a lot of wrestling fans who haven't watched a lot of this stuff since that time. And it's kind of watching this with rose-colored glasses. And let's not give the false pretense that, you know, everything was great in 2002. It was far from it. SmackDown obviously had that great run during those last 6 months of 2002. But it's not like, you know, back then they had everything in gear. I mean, there was a... I don't even necessarily know. If you were to look at the 2002 model versus today, I would say, honestly, I think that this has been a very good year for the WWE in 2013, particularly with storytelling over the last couple of months coming out of WrestleMania and throughout the summer. Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. This show is a sad reminder of how good SmackDown was, unlike today where it's mostly a recap show with meaningless matches thrown in to fill time. This was a must-see TV show where angles actually developed. I could go without Funaki's comedy, but this was a different WWE, so I kind of get it. Weird watching a totally vanilla John Cena play wrestler. Main event was good and perfectly set the stage for the upcoming pay-per-view. All in all, a good show, but that was pretty much the standard in 2002. Paul in the UK, really hope you guys review more stuff from 2002. While it felt like hot-shotting and haphazard booking, it was certainly an eventful year where WWE threw out absolutely everything. NWO, Shawn Michaels returning, the brand extension, Brock Lesnar, Austin walking out. Well, they didn't really plan that. Eric Bischoff taking over Raw, HLA, necrophilia, and more. It really looks like 5 years worth of happening stuffed into one. A big change from year-long aces and eights arcs and constant rematches on consecutive WWE pay-per-views in 2013. For me, the thing that really stood out was WWE messing around with the rules of their world. I'm referring to the camera following Matt Hardy's route through the gorilla position and back out into the arena. Very spontaneous and creative, especially for SmackDown, which feels by the numbers most of the time. Overall, a stacked brand at the time and a great go-home show. And let's finish off here with Trent from Texas, who writes, oddly enough, the most impressionable thing that I took from this episode of SmackDown was how great Billy Kidman was, and how he has been forgotten and underappreciated. I remember in WCW in 1998 just how much more fluid, agile, and athletic he was than any wrestler I'd ever seen at that point in time. He was the first American that could work a Mexican style, and he did it better than anybody at that time. His match against Angle only reminded me of how amazing he was. He looked tremendous, and made Angle look even better than he was, if that is possible. I would point to this guy as the first true prototype of an X Division style of wrestler, and his work from WCW still looks great and holds up to this day. Anyways, I thought it was important to give Kidman some much needed love and state that I found this episode to be very enjoyable, aside from the embarrassing dialogue of Nydia being proud of wanting to show her tits after a match to an audience filled with kids. So thank you everyone for your feedback. As you know, next week is the big SummerSlam 2002 review. And Wei and I have actually done some long-term booking here, culminating with this SummerSlam after reviewing Raw and SmackDown, and we actually have planned out a few weeks past that, which we will go into more detail in the next episode. But our anniversary is coming up in 3 weeks from this time, and we have selected what we are going to review for that anniversary show. And all I'm going to say is I think this one has extremely high potential. We are going to find out. I think everyone is... I don't know if you'll be able to guess it, but it's going to be a good one. So that's going to wrap us up, everyone. Wei Ting is now en route to San Francisco. I think that this song is appropriate to go out in his honor, and we'll be back still to come this week. Bauer and Pollock, Review and Impact with myself and Nate Milton, the MMA Report featuring Conor McGregor, which if you don't know too much about this guy, you'll want to hear this guy on the MMA Report this week. And then The Law this weekend, Sunday night, 11 Eastern, myself and Dan Labransky in the host seat with Santino Morella joining us live in studio. And local performer Anthony Kingdom James as well will be stopping by along with Dave Meltzer. Lots more stuff coming up, so go to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave us some feedback. We always appreciate that. And here we go out with the sounds of San Francisco.
The anticipation is at a fever pitch. The Rock and Brock Lesnar collide Sunday. We're 3 days away! Sunday can't get here quick enough! I can't wait for SummerSlam!
You're gonna Tokyo.